Welcome, everyone, to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is episode 61. Your host today, Marty Jones, produced by Owen Woods and Chris Mondragon. And my guest today is Ian Munoz from the San Luis Valley Great Outdoors. He's the Great Outdoors Action Team Leader, the crew leader. That's the GOATS team leader. So, before we get started, I just want to remember to thank Don Richmond for the music that you hear during the podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. So welcome. As I mentioned, Ian Munoz is our guest today, for the GOATS crew leader for San Luis Valley Great Outdoors. Welcome, Ian, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm real excited to be here with y'all.
Well, thanks. And tell us a little bit about your experience, your background, what brought you to the San Luis Valley and SLV Go.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started as a trails program manager about 3 months ago in April. And I'm coming here from Big Bend, Texas. I was previously working in Big Bend for about 8 years. Before that, I was working in state parks all over Texas. So it's been kind of a journey that's led me here, but I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. It's a great place to be if you're interested in the world of trail work or trail development.
And it has to be a little more pleasant temperature-wise here that at this time of year than in Big Bend area of Texas.
Absolutely. It is roasting there right now. And, you know, it doesn't get as cold, though, so I'm a little spooked about what the winter might bring here.
You know what? You're going to be just fine. I guarantee it. You'll be... You won't have any issues. You know, as long as you have appropriate clothing, you can handle almost any weather.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I feel like I got some shopping to do before the winter rolls around. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know about that. Why did you decide to go into trail work as a career?
Yeah, that was an interesting turn in my life. I wasn't, you know, far out of high school when I joined AmeriCorps, Texas Conservation Corps.
Excellent. Thank you very much for doing that.
Yeah, no, thank you. It was hands down the most life-changing decision I made. I was really at a crossroads, a typical 19-year-old kind of unsure where my life was heading. And, you know, the moment I found trail work and found, you know, that this is a possibility, I can maintain and build trails and make a living. I knew that I was going to do everything I could to stay doing trail work as long as my body would allow me to.
So did you grow up as a kid camping and doing outdoor sorts of things?
Actually, I did not. My family, you know, they're not nature haters, but they do not frequent the outdoors as often. Most of their, you know, vacations entail big cities and experiencing that side of life. But, you know, growing up, it was something that was always, you know, in me and something I wanted to pursue and something I wanted to experience was just the outdoor world. And I grew up in El Paso, Texas, born and raised. And during, you know, my senior year of high school, I was lucky enough to move to Central Texas, to a small farming town called Castroville, Texas. And that was really where I found my love for the outdoors. And it started with fishing and then hunting. And then ultimately, you know, I found trail work, and I had not previously been a backpacker or an avid hiker, but I feel very close to trails and experiencing this other world of maintenance and construction. It's definitely a more intimate experience often with nature and trails. So I'm very grateful. And I try to recognize that there's a lot of folks who have different, you know, experiences and relationships with trails and may not be, you know, a construction or maintenance background, but it's really good to always have those insights and voices of the users and the maintainers.
Excellent. You know, trail work in the mountains must be a little different than trail work down in the Big Bend area. How do they differ?
They are extremely different. And I will say that Big Bend does have some nice mountains, some impressive peaks. It has a really awesome, you know, forested mountain range, bears. It's got a lot of that world, but it is nowhere near the caliber of what we are talking about with the San Luis Valley, as far as the elevation of the peaks, the streams, the runoff, the weather. It's been a huge learning curve, but I would say, you know, ultimately the biggest difference with trail management here in the San Luis Valley for me has been, you know, the vegetation and the trees. The way the vegetation interacts with the trail will often, you know, require different maintenance procedures and, you know, timeline. So a lot of the trail problems that you can, you know, commonly experience out here is just simply from overgrowth and overhead clearance. And there's a lot of pack stock use out here historically in the forest, which we don't have a ton of national forests. We do typically on the, you know, on the east side of Texas, we have some stuff in the Big Thicket, but this relationship with the Forest Service and their trails is, you know, a little bit different with the activity that they see. So there's a lot of different maintenance needs, as far as, you know, distinguishing where the trail is going through a forest versus a desert. They both face their own challenges, whereas a forest can get really thick and hard to see ahead of you. You know, a desert can be very sparse and, you know, really, really open and sometimes hard to tell where the trail's going.
Right. And here in the Rio Grande National Forest and all the forests in Colorado, there's a need for a significant amount of water bar work. Did you have to put in many water bars in the trails in Big Bend also?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's tons of water bars and check step features along the trail. Some of them, dating back to CCC days in the 20s and 30s, some of those structures were constructed by the Civilian Conservation Corps, which is really special and an honor to still be able to clear those drains and maintain those structures. But absolutely, most trails will require, you know, some kind of added drainage feature. But, you know, as we're learning more and more, we can get ahead of all of that kind of, you know, maintenance and installation with proper trail design and, you know, proper layout from the initial development of the trail.
You know, as I look at you, Ian, you're not a giant person with these great big bulging muscles, but you look really fit. And that's something that is pretty important for doing trail work, to be physically able to do the work.
I would agree. It is a physically demanding job, absolutely. And I've often just been grateful because I don't frequent the gym. I don't, you know, run the track after work. But, you know, through the day-to-day life of a trail maintenance worker, you're always getting those steps in and you're always getting the workout that you need. So I'm really happy that I'm often just tossed into a situation where my only option is to carry these tools and this material up the mountain. And, you know, you not only, you know, become stronger from it, but you end each day feeling super rewarded and it feels good going home at the end of the day.
Oh yeah. You know, that's one of the great things about doing stuff that you can see is that, like you said, at the end of the day, you feel like you really accomplished something. And that's mentally and spiritually very rewarding.
I agree. I believe that, you know, us as humans, we're you know, we were meant to be working with our hands and being active outside. So it's a very fulfilling job often.
So for our listeners who may not be all that familiar with trail work, you mentioned have to carry all the tools and do all the work. What kind of tools do you use on a regular basis?
Historically, you know, I've been in situations where it's been a wide range of everything from heavy equipment like compactors and mini excavators and skid steers to, you know, pick mattocks, axes, crosscut saws, and it's going to be a whole number of factors determining what kind of tools you're taking out into the field. You know, often we're working in wilderness zones out here.
Yeah, no skid steers in the wilderness.
Absolutely, no power tools. So that changes things up dramatically. Sometimes it's just simply logistics. You know, how are you going to be able to get a big old tool up a big old mountain? So you're often using primitive hand tools, which is great, you know, and it's not just using the tools, but maintaining the tools and taking care of the tools. And it's somewhat of a lost art. Some of the work we're doing and some of the tools we're using, and we're really grateful to have knowledgeable crew members, because a lot of these tools, you know, they require a little specialty use or specialty maintenance. So, it's something we want to, a tradition, you know, we want to keep alive by building these trails and creating sustainable work with hand tools.
Great. So tell us about some of the current projects the Goat's Crew is working on.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have, we have the stewardship crew. They, you know, they work often in more remote, you know, primitive wilderness settings. They're currently at a trail number 832 in the Forest Service. This is near Big Meadows Reservoir. And it's kind of a, from what I, you know, I've come to understand, it's a notorious little section of trail called the Highline Steps. And it's an intimidating little section of trail. It's at about 12,000 feet. So there's no tree line up there, and they're backcountry camping nearby. So they're camped about a mile from the work site, in a really beautiful meadow. But they hike up there every morning, and they're trying to correct this really dangerous, narrow, exposed section of trail. And we work, you know, with the Forest Service and try to align our projects with their goals as well. So, you know, the idea is that we want to restore this section of trail to pack stock use. From what I understand, it gets heavy use from hunters during elk season. So we want hunters to be able to access some of these more remote locations along this trail. So it requires widening the trail, which isn't quite as easy as it sounds, considering everything up there is essentially crumbly
rock.
Yeah. So the crew is being real careful, a little bit of added safety measures with this project, but it's a really cool project. It's a really cool segment of trail. And I think, you know, after they get done with these improvements, it'll be accessible to tons more users.
Great. And what other sorts of projects?
Right. So simultaneously, we got the Moto crew. Our Moto trail crew is out also in the Divide District of the Rio Grande National Forest. And they're working at a place called Groundhog Park.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful area.
It is.
This is
right on
thing.
Lagarita Creek.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, this is a really beautiful open meadow, and it is an existing trail that has faced a number of issues over the years. There's a good stretch of it that goes through some low-lying boggy areas, which creates a lot of trail issues, especially for moto use. So the idea there was to do a trail reroute, which is where we essentially close down a problem section of trail and reroute it to higher ground, a more sustainable route that's going to last longer and be more fun for the users. So that's going to be about 1.3 miles. And they've made some phenomenal progress on that stretch over the past couple weeks. And that whole trail is actually being constructed with the Mini X. So it's a mechanized trail construction, and they've cleared a ton of trees to establish their corridor with chainsaws, because luckily this site is not in a wilderness zone.
Right. It's not real easy to get to. I mean, you can drive to it, but you wouldn't want to take your family sedan on the road up to Groundhog Park.
I would agree. It's not a casual day trip up there at all. But I think the Moto community is really excited about this reroute. And you know, it was laid out with Moto use in mind. So it's going to be a lot different than some of these historic national forest trails.
So you said that the crews are camping near the work sites. How many days in a row do they camp before they have to come down and get resupplied and maybe take a shower? And
Yeah, we and in the trail world, we call them little hitches, you know, a work hitch. I've had work hitches up to 11 days, 2 weeks. But typically our goat crews work 4-day hitches. So they'll go out Monday morning and begin the work for the week, and they'll come back Thursday afternoon, you know, maintain all the tools, get the vehicles ready for the next week. And, you know, that's the work week for them. They're off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So sometimes that changes depending on, you know, just little factors here and there. But we try to maintain a pretty regular hitch schedule.
And do the crews eat pretty well when they're up there camping, working on the trails?
You know, it's a diverse menu. I mean, it's a wide range. There's folks eating, you know, sandwiches, and there's folks eating, you know, dehydrated meals. So it's a personal preference.
Everybody's on their own for their food. You don't have a cook that goes up with them.
No, we found typically that it's best to just let folks choose their own menu for the week.
Yeah, good. So one of the things that I saw recently was the bridge that you guys built up along the South Zapata Lake Trail. And my wife said to be sure to thank you, because she and a friend were doing some hiking along that trail last year, and they got to the place where the bridge is now, and they looked at it and said, yeah, you know, there's a storm coming in. I don't think we can try to navigate this and still get back before the storm hits. So thank you very much. And what was it like working on that bridge?
Yeah, that was probably a good call, by the way. But it was a great experience. I mean, a beautiful work site. And you know, that trail gets a lot of use. So I really feel like that bridge was a great improvement for a high use trail like that. And a very robust bridge. The special thing, you know, is most of the structural components of that bridge were sourced on site right there, including some of the support abutments were, you know, stone sourced at the creek right there, including the stringer beams were trees that were felled there on site. So that was special. And I feel that bridge is going to last a lot longer than, you know, some of the previous installments on that creek crossing. So
you mean the little log that was laid across?
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Very good. What do you do for fun in your free time, if you ever get any free time?
I have been very busy the past few months, but I've always enjoyed fishing. And coming from Texas, I've always enjoyed bass fishing specifically. So it's been a learning curve. The fly fishing, the trout fishing, it's a whole different world up here. But the amount of locations you can go and have a good chance at catching something, it's overwhelming. I mean, just compared to Big Bend, you know, the one fishing source I had was typically the Rio Grande, which could have been a 2-hour drive away. It's a real large region, but here you're never too far from some really impressive stuff.
Yeah. So if you're interested in bass fishing, there are some places you can catch bass here in the San Luis Valley. Not until after July 15th. There's an area called it's known as the BLM Wetlands. They are on the east side of the valley between Alamosa and the Great Sand Dunes National Park. Just some wetlands that traditionally have been maintained for bird habitat, but they have been stocked. Sunfish, bass, trout.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to go there until after a pretty good hard frost, because there are lots and lots of deer flies and other insect life that make it a little less pleasant.
The one downside of the wetlands sometimes, yeah, of the bugs.
Right, right. And then over on the other side of Wolf Creek Pass, west of Wolf Creek, near the town of Pagosa Springs, there's a lake called Echo Lake, and there are bass in Echo Lake also.
Echo Lake. Put it on the list.
Yeah, there you go. There's plenty of things to explore. Russell Lake's wetlands up near Sawatch and so on. And if you haven't done any fishing for carp, especially fly fishing for carp, That's a real fun fish to catch on a fly.
That's what I've heard. And that actually has taken off a little bit in Texas just because there isn't as many fly fishing opportunities. There have been some anglers who have started targeting those big carp in there, and it's sometimes healthy to thin them out a little bit.
Right, right. So what do you have lined up in the future working with goats? And first of all, tell us how you're enjoying being a team lead for the goats teams.
I'm enjoying it. It's a great crew to work with. It's a bunch of knowledgeable and passionate folks who really care about what they're doing out there on the trails. So I couldn't ask for a better situation. And we have two awesome crew leads, Jimmy, who is our moto crew lead. He's been with the goats for a handful of years now. So it's really awesome to have him on the crew, and that institutional knowledge and ski patrol in the winter. He's a boatman. So it's good to have these folks that are also out on their time recreating in the outdoors, and they got their own, personal feelings about what they would like to see out in the field when we're working. So it's great to have that insight and that local knowledge. We got Kirby as our stewardship crew leader, and he actually also works for the Divide District with the U.S. Forest Service, and just a wealth of trail knowledge and experience as well. So we have great leadership in the field.
As a supervisor, do you get to spend much time in the field?
And you know, that's one of the challenging parts of my job is balancing that support for the field work and getting things done, you know, behind the scenes and in the office. And you know, I've historically been a trail dog on the ground in the field camping with the crew. So sometimes I miss them out there, but I do try to visit them in the field and lend a helping hand where I can, but there's often a lot to do, you know, just with the logistics and organizing. So I think there's, you know, a place for both roles often.
Well, I hope you get to spend at least some time outside doing what you obviously love to do. Any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
I'm just really grateful for getting a chance to talk about, you know, trails and the goats with y'all. This is a new experience for me, and I'm coming to the SLV just thankful for everyone being so welcoming and my opportunities, you know, to give back and to create something that the community loves and brings people out to the SLV. This is a wonderful place to be for trails and trail users. So I'm looking to stick around for a while, and you know, we're really shifting our mentality and really dialing it in on the goats and just trying to do the most sustainable work we can do out there. And we're really thoughtful with, you know, the impact that we make in our public lands. And when we swing a tool, we're conscious that, you know, we're taking everything into account, and we're out there, you know, providing something that the community is going to be grateful for.
Excellent. I'm really pleased to hear that, Ian. So my guest today has been Ian Munoz from the San Luis Valley Great Outdoors, the GOATS lead and supervisor. And thanks a lot for joining us today, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, some outdoor conditions for July, but first, a word from our sponsor.
All aboard the historic Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad for the 2025 season, operating in the scenic landscapes between Antonito, Colorado and Chama, New Mexico, between May 31st and October 25th, Tuesday through Sunday. Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad is located just 27 miles south to Alamosa, Colorado. Climb aboard for an unforgettable adventure for all ages.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. Here are some outdoor conditions. A recommendation from our producer, Owen Woods, to keep your eyes out for snakes on the trails. It's always a good reminder to be wildlife aware. Owen had a run-in with a rattlesnake on the Middle Frisco Trail this past weekend. If you don't know where that is, it's outside of Del Norte. The snake and Owen startled one another. But Owen gave the snake a wide berth. He appreciated the rattle from a distance. And that whole thing led to a cool experience. He showed me the little video that he shot, and it was a pretty good-sized snake, not just a teeny little one. Second week of July, going into Stampede weekend, will be dry and hot. Believe me, it's warm out there today. Supposed to be even warmer tomorrow. There may be a chance of scattered thunderstorms on the weekend. Here's a couple of fishing reports from Arc Anglers on the Middle Basin of the Arkansas from Buena Vista to Salida. The river has cleared and is fishing very well. Current conditions are prime in the Middle Basin for both wading and floating following an early peak of runoff, which has opened the door to the summer fishing season ahead of schedule. Dry and dry dropper fishing is very productive right now, the result of current flows and early summer hatches. Great Edge habitat is open to the fish, so expect trout to vacate faster areas of current and move to velocity shelters along the banks and amid submerged midstream structure. Fish that drop into the depths below faster water are hard to reach, but the fish along the banks are prime targets for a shallow nymph or dry dropper rig. Expect to see golden stones, yellow sallies, caddis, pale morning duns, midges, and various terrestrials. Streamer fishing is also very productive now, particularly from a boat. Anglers should also consider beefing up on leader material, as the need for stealth is long past. Heavier material comes in handy when working fish out of higher flows. We advise wade anglers to fish from shore whenever possible and to avoid wading in water where you can't see the river bottom. And from the Rio Grande anglers, we have entered low water on the Rio Grande. Therefore, stay tuned to the USGS discharge sites. Currently, the Rio Grande at 30 mile is at 50.8 CFS. At Wagon Wheel Gap, it's 275 CFS. And in Del Norte, it's at 420 CFS. This is considered low flows for our rivers. Floaters, the river is dodgy, so please know your lines. Anything from Wagon Wheel Gap down is floatable, but very tough rowing. We would recommend floating anything from the upper collar down. The best float right now is from upper collar to the 149 bridge. It is that time of year to have your water temperature gauge with you. By about 1 p.m., we ask you to stop fishing, take the temperature, and be diligent in respecting the public resource. Wade fishermen, the upper river is the place to be right now. Public land spots on Middle Creek Road are fishing excellent. And now the news. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser was in the valley this week, and he stopped into the Alamosa Citizen podcast studio on the south side of Alamosa. Here's what he had to say about the recent attempt to sell off millions of acres of public lands.
I want to bring up one more thing, and again, we appreciate all your time, and that's red states, blue states, because it does seem like we're in an era where maybe the federal government, this particular administration, is playing a strategy where red states get certain considerations from the federal bureaucracy, blue states get a different. Do you see any of that? Do you see any danger in how we administer now federal laws when we look at red states versus blue states in this country? Do you see, is that a concern of yours from where you can see things of how the federal government is looking at the country and looking at the map in the states of the country? Does any of that ring true to you?
Chris, I'm terrified by that. And for an obvious and painful example, look at what Mike Lee had proposed for public lands. Sell public lands off to the highest bidder in Colorado, but protect public lands for the public in Montana. What's the story? red states versus blue states. In red states, we protect public lands for the public. In blue states, we sell them off to the highest bidder. I find that to be un-American. I also believe there's serious constitutional problems in that such a strategy, and you could tell that story in many different contexts, but this was a pretty clear story line. I think that's a violation of equal protection of the law. So I'm ready to go to court to stop that sort of selective government administration to harm states based on who they voted for president. It's just wrong, and it's not how we operate in America. America is meant to be e pluribus unum, out of many, we are one. We have presidential elections, and we don't punish our political opponents through selling off public lands or withholding funds or prosecuting people in a court of law. Those are all concerns that I am watching, and I'm going to make sure that we defend this very important principle of impartial government administration, impartial law enforcement.
In other news, the Trump administration issued an executive order on July 3rd raising national park entry and recreation pass fees for non-resident and international visitors. The order reads, "From the awe-inspiring Grand Canyon to the tranquility of the Great Smoky Mountains, America's national parks have provided generations of American families with unforgettable memories. It is the policy of my administration to preserve these opportunities for American families in future generations by increasing entry fees for foreign tourists, improving affordability for United States residents, and expanding opportunities to enjoy America's splendid national treasures." Next to the revenue the administration says it will gain through increased entry fees, the order also calls for the Secretary of the Interior to use the National Parks and Public Land Legacy Restoration Fund to pay for infrastructure upgrades and visitor capacity expansions to allow more Americans to visit national parks. The Department of Interior notes this will raise as much as $90 million. The executive order did not specify how much to increase prices by. However, the order calls for the preferential treatment of American citizens and their access to recreation. The San Luis Valley Ecosystems Council has formed the Sangre Wilderness Group. The working group was formed in response to the proposed sale of millions of acres of public lands by Utah Senator Mike Lee. That provision was removed from the Trump administration's one, quote, One Big Beautiful Bill Act, unquote, due to massive public outcry. The Ecosystem Council's executive director, Christine Canale, created the group after a June 20th meeting in the Baca Crestone area. She noted that a wilderness designation enacted by Congress would permanently protect the entire western slope of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains from the lower sagebrush to the alpine tundra. The discussion concluded with the creation of the new Wilderness Working Group to protect the, quote, ribbon of the Rio Grande National Forest from Pancha Pass to the preserve. "We would like to see this whole area become designated wilderness," unquote, said Canale. Four paddleboarders were knocked into Rampart Reservoir by a dramatic increase in wind and waves this past Sunday afternoon. They can thank their life jackets for saving them. Colorado Parks and Wildlife noted that conditions had drastically changed, and without life preservers, the day could have ended much differently. Two adults and two teens, unrelated to each other, were recreating in separate areas and found themselves swimming in water temperatures recorded in the 50s in a reservoir with depths of up to 180 feet. The El Paso County Sheriff's deputies arrived first and borrowed a citizen's vessel to initiate a search for the paddleboarders. Deputies also made the call for drone and additional boat support. The deputies located and rescued the two adults and soon received news that the teens had made it safely to shore on their own. Tim Kronig, CPW Area Wildlife Manager, said, quote, "The fact that these individuals chose to wear life jackets most certainly saved their lives. The majority of water-related deaths in Colorado occur because people do not wear a life jacket. In the 2 days prior, our team made direct contact at Rampart Reservoir with more than 400 boaters, anglers, and others recreating there to ensure compliance with safety requirements and fishing licenses," unquote. Now, a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The Stations of the Cross 10K race in San Luis is Sunday, July 27th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. The race is part of the weekend-long Fiesta de Santiago y Santa Ana. The route goes through the town of San Luis, along beautiful country roads, through the historic Vega, past the oldest public ditch, and finishes with a climb up to the Stations of the Cross. It costs $35 to register, and you can register online at raceentry.com. Search Stations of the Cross 10K. And another race coming up in just a couple of weeks is the 48th Manassa Pioneer Days 5K. It's on Saturday, July 19th from 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. The Pioneer Days 5K is easily the largest community run that is staged annually in the San Luis Valley. Last year, it drew in a record 474 runners. Online registration for the Manassa Pioneer Days 5K can be found at runsignup.com. Search for Pioneer Days 5K. The race fee is $20 plus a processing fee. Online registration closes July 16th. Runners can sign up in person on Friday, July 18th by going to Jack Dempsey Park in Manassa from 1 to 5 p.m. or by registering at 7 a.m. on race day. That's Saturday, July 19th. And if you need to register on race day, be sure you get there by 7 a.m. or a little before. That ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced by Chris Mondragon and edited by Owen Woods, published by AlamosaCitizen.com. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are any topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, send an email to info@AlamosaCitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. Until next time, this is Marty Jones saying get outside, enjoy this summer weather that we have right now. Hop on a bike, hop on a trail, go fish, do something, go camp outdoors, get outside. See you in a couple of weeks.